Okay, we are back this week. Here we are in the latest episode of the Motor Millennials podcast. My name is Zach Rothenberger with Anthony Lucci. As always, we're bringing you in the latest episode. How we doing, Luch? It's August, which is kind of crazy. We got some beautiful weather here in Northeastern America.
Yeah, no, I mean, excited that, like you said, we actually had some nice weather recently. Like last weekend was beautiful for taking your car out. But I start to get a little nervous around this time of the year because I know what's approaching. But let's not talk about that. Let's, you know, stay on the good vibes.
Yeah, enjoy the moment we're living in. Not what's ahead, Luch. Just enjoy the moment. But so as always, before we dive into this week's episode, you know, we like to kind of recap what we've been talking about recently for those who have missed it. Last week we talked about tuning your car, whether it was from fuel injection or with a carburetor, some little tips, you know, tuning 101, if you will. The week before that, we talked about driving stick versus an automatic transmission, what we prefer, what's better for racing, what's better for just cruising on the street and things like that. And the week before, we had Top Fuel Dragster driver Justin Ashley with us on the podcast. So if you're interested in watching, or if you watch Top Fuel, you're interested in kind of getting a behind the scenes look at what it's like to race Top Fuel, not just from a racer's perspective, but also from a business perspective, be sure to check that episode out. And while we're talking about Justin, for those who don't know, last week, he had severe heat exhaustion and he was not able to make the final round in Pomona against Leah Pruitt. But we are glad to report that, you know, he's doing better now. And overall, I mean, he made the right decision. You got to look out for your own safety, especially when you're behind a vehicle like that, and also your competitor's safety. So it takes a lot of credit to him for making that decision to bail out, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially you're in the final round and, you know, who wants to step away, but you know what, kudos to him. He did the right thing. And, you know, he's going to be around and safe, like you said, Zach, to race another day. He's young, just like all of us. You know, he's just starting out pretty much. So yeah, he has a long, long time ahead of him to win many, many more finals.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better. And also before we start in for this week's episode, you know, we've been doing some motoring ourselves lately a little bit, and we have some exciting things coming up this weekend as well, right? So for those who don't follow along on our social media, we were at the Eastwood Summer Classic in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. A lot of beautiful cars. I mean, how many cars do you think there were?
That would be, what, 400 maybe?
I would say at least several hundred, absolutely.
I mean, several hundred. Yeah.
No question about that.
I mean, the parking lots were filled, the fields were filled, everything was filled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is great to see. I mean, it's good for business for Eastwood, and it's just good in general for hobbyists and enthusiasts out there. There's a lot of great cars. I mean, what would you say stood out to you? I mean, we had some modern muscle and some old school muscle.
Yeah, Zach, I think there was a 68 Chevelle. 68 maybe, or 69, one or the other. But it was yellow. I think it was pro charged and put it out like around 1300 horsepower, I think it said, but just, it was yellow with white stripes. And I didn't actually even go look at the car, but I just saw it when it pulled in and then in the field, because there, like I said, there was so much stuff to look at, but it just looked like from a distance, it looked incredible. So hopefully I get to see it again, see it up close. But what would you say was your favorite?
Yeah, it did look beautiful. A lot of yellow, but it was very tastefully done. For me, it's going to sound weird. What was the Corvette? Was it a 68 Corvette, the guy you were talking to who was the original owner?
Oh, yeah, that was cool. Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but I just think it's not necessarily the car, but it's the story behind the car, which is what I always take away from events, like when you get to talk to the owner, and then especially when you see that it's the original owner and it only has 48,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
It's just cool. Cause you know, those cars back in 68 were probably worth $2,000 or $3,000, where today they're worth a lot more than that, obviously.
Yeah. So, and that was a unique, like goldish, I forget exactly the color he said, but something you didn't see often, you know, and that's always, those one-off colors always seem to stand out. You know, I mean, it's always great to have like, you know, car painted red or whatever color, but it's not some of those colors that you don't see all the time. And it's kind of, they kind of catch your eye, even if they might not fit the car the best, but like it just, I don't know, it kind of just, it's different, right? It's not something you're used to seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And we saw some of our friends, Josh and Chris McClintock, Chris out of Bucks Customs, which is again is local to Limerick, Pennsylvania, Pottstown, PA area. And it was great seeing them. And, you know, he produces some phenomenal interior and motorcycle seats. So definitely check those guys out at Bucks Customs on Instagram, Facebook, wherever, social media. But as you know, looking into this coming weekend ahead, we're also going to be heading to the track at Maple Grove on Sunday. Saturday, they have the Geezers of the Grove race, which unfortunately my car does not fit because it's a 2000 Camaro, not a 70 whatever year and older, or 94 and older, whatever it is. But yeah, we'll be racing on Sunday. The weather looks good, so it looks like we're going to be able to get some quarter mile passes and hopefully break into the 11s with that car. So
nice.
Should be a good time. But so yeah, so let's get to it. So for this week's episode, you know, it's kind of like it's an interesting one. I think basically the topic is, you know, what cars that you saw made you say, WTF, why did they do that? Why did they make the jump from this generation to this generation car and made these changes? It looks hideous, things like that. You know, questionable car designs, questionable changes in the lineup, if you will. So let's get, I mean, this isn't necessarily the ugliest car. It's more so like what kind of took you by surprise from a change that was made. And before we kind of dive into our picks, we want to definitely make sure you guys let us know what your picks are too for this. So definitely reach out to us on social media. So Lucci, what do you got for yours?
Yeah. And this is, you know, we're not trying to offend anyone's feelings if you have this car in your garage or in your driveway, but sometimes auto manufacturers make us go, what the, and yeah. We're like, you know, what's this all about? So I'm going to start off with something recent. And I believe this came out in 2017, if I'm correct. Maybe that's when it was unveiled, but it's the Kia Stinger. And it's just, I don't know what it is about these cars, but I never liked them and I never will like them. I just think that, first off, I think Kia, that's fine, you know, with the vehicles that they make, but I do not think they are or ever will be a performance-oriented manufacturer. And I think you have performance-oriented manufacturers, and that's what they do well. Like, they know how to make cars that go fast and handle well. And I don't think Kia is one of those brands. I don't think that fits their mold. That's not their identity. So, I mean, I'll rattle off a few facts here. I mean, the base one starts at 36,000. You know, yeah, it gets 32 miles to a gallon on the highway. So it's no muscle car or anything like that. But you can get a 2.5 liter four-cylinder turbocharged engine in it, or a 3.3 liter twin turbo V6 that puts out 368 horsepower, 0 to 60 in 4.7 seconds. I don't know. I don't know. I'm just not impressed by these numbers. Again, maybe this is me being biased, but you know, on their website they have built to thrill. I don't think you're not thrilling me, buddy. But
unless you LS swap it, it's not a performance car.
Yeah, yeah, that's your bet. You're exactly right, Zach. Your best bet is to LS swap it, or but I still don't even think it's an attractive car. If you look at like the rear lights, how they kind of like wrap around like a yeah. On the rear quarter. So I'm just going to share one quick story and I'll stop hating on the car. Shortly after the Kia Stinger first came out, I think it was like the year that it was first, they were first being sold on the road. And that this is, they have like what, the GT1 and GT2 models or trim levels. So I guess it was one of those, but I was driving down the road and kid you not, there in the turning lane to get onto a highway was a Kia, brand new red Kia Stinger sitting and with its four ways on. And as I was driving by it, guess what was pulling up? A tow truck. Mm. So I'm just saying, I don't know what Kia's doing. I don't think they're going to be for sale for much longer. I don't know why you would buy one. I think for the money, you can probably get a lot nicer of a vehicle from a lot of other manufacturers.
Yeah. I mean, could have said it better. I mean, when you think Kia, you don't think race car or performance car typically. So stay in your lane, right?
Yeah. Stay in your lane. Exactly. What about you, Zach?
Yeah. So my first one, it was kind of like I was 14 at the time. The sixth generation Dodge Charger. So the 2006 Dodge Charger, which specifically fell into the 2006 to 2010 years of production. You know, it was the first Dodge Charger built since like the mid 80s, I guess. And obviously, you know, those vehicles weren't the most aesthetically pleasing. But when you come out in 2006 and you advertise the new Dodge Charger, which at that point in time, you know, when I think the words Dodge Charger, I'm pretty sure the remake of Dukes of Hazzard was just out. So I think like General Lee, I think of, you know, muscle car. I think of, you know, something that's really cool. And they roll out a four-door sedan Dodge Charger. Now, I will say they had four different options, and two of them were V6 based and the other two had a Hemi, which the Hemi's fine, but the car was never made in with a stick shift with a manual transmission. Mm-hmm. So like that would have made it a little bit more interesting for me. But the fact that it had a four door and just in general, you look at the front end of the cars, it didn't really do too much. And then at that point in time, they also in NASCAR, they also had the Charger as the NASCAR body for the Dodge vehicles. But yet that was technically don't have any doors, but that was more of a coupe style. So like, why couldn't they have done that for the cars on the street? Like, I don't know. Four door muscle car doesn't typically work. And I don't think this did. And to this day, they still roll like the front ends have gotten a little bit more aggressive looking, and I'll give Dodge that credit. Cause you know, I think some of the Dodge modern muscle cars are pretty superior and sweet, but when those rolled out in 2006, it was kind of like, to me, I was like, what the heck, why would they make it four door? So.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Zach. And I agree with you. I think the new ones, and like they have some like ones with the scat pack and these Hellcat red eyes, they look wicked. They did a really good job massaging the body and getting it to look a lot better. It kind of don't even realize now that it is a sedan. I still wish though, like they would make a two-door version of it though. Like what would it be like? Like why not? Like the Challengers sell great and they're two doors. I mean, I get it. So the Challenger is a two-door, and if you want a four-door car, you go to the Charger. But like you said, from the heritage standpoint, it just doesn't match up. And then also the other thing, Zach, is like you said it too, like about why not a manual transmission in the in the Charger? Because I think like back in the day, right? Didn't they have like the pistol grip shifter? Like, I feel like they're missing a huge opportunity there to kind of bring something like retro, you know, back and tie that in.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, it's funny you say that because I was actually at a Dodge dealership on Friday and I was talking to the salesperson and I asked about the whole manual transmission thing. And he was saying that any vehicle that comes in that's stick at this point in time basically just sits on the lot and doesn't sell for a very long time because of, you know, the population not knowing how to drive stick and things like that. But that's neither here nor there. But I completely agree. You would think they would make a stick option. And yeah, I would love to see them do like a 1 year, maybe limited edition coupe Charger. So if anyone from Dodge is listening, which I doubt you are, come on, man or gal.
Help us out.
Hell yeah. Do something. Wake up. So what's a third one?
All right. So I'm just going to go straight into it. The late 70s, early 80s Corvettes. So the end of the C3 generation. And
you're going after GM here. We don't usually do that. Hey, we all have our flaws.
Yeah, well, hopefully the GM executives aren't listening. No, but yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, I figured like, all right, let's really try to, you know, get to... We are GM boys, but, you know, not everyone's perfect, right? Mm. So, yeah, I picked particularly this 1982 Corvette, which was the last model year of the C3. not a bad looking car, right? I mean, like all the C3s look good. I mean, yeah, the earlier one, 69, 70, they were obviously the, in my opinion, the best looking. While they still had, you know, chrome bumpers and I just feel like it was, you know, that initial design was with the, I call them like the slash fins on the front fender. I just think that was a better design. But yeah, still not a bad looking car by any means. But I thought the power plant just really lacked in the performance realm of what GM was capable of at that time. Now, think about late 70s. Emissions were mandates were going through the roof and like power. There was like, there were no muscle cars anymore, really. Yeah. I mean, nothing worth buying. Right. So I guess, you know, GM was doing what they could. They had the Crossfire injection system, which was developed for the fourth generation Corvette. But it was introduced on the 82 Corvette. And, you know, not that is, I'm sure it wasn't a bad engine, you know, but it produced only 200 horsepower. And oof. My dad drove our 73 Buick Grand Sport with a 455 back then in the early 80s. And he said he
gobbled them up,
would gobble those brand new Corvettes up all day long. And I just think for the price tag back then, it was $21,000 brand new. I feel like, I don't know. I wouldn't have probably purchased that. I would have, you know, hopefully if I was in the right mindset, if I was alive back then, I would have purchased some old muscle cars and stored them away. But like everyone wished they did. But yeah, it's, I think GM had other good power plants that they were developing at the time. Like, and you know, like the Buick V6 that was turbocharged that was in development. I think they could have now. Yeah. All right. I know. The Vet always has eight cylinders. I get it. But, you know, that would have been, had a little bit more power. And, you know, I don't know. I just think that 200 horsepower in a Corvette is kind of bland. They should have at least offered some over-the-counter performance options for it.
Yeah, that's a sin. That's a sin. Yeah, I think, and you hit the nail on the head, I think that those model year Corvettes were a product, and every vehicle almost basically at that point in time was a product of the time period. You know, yeah. Like we've talked about previous episodes, how there's certain decades where you could tell a car was from this decade because of what was going on, you know, in the world or just in general with production and emissions and all that nonsense. So yeah, no, unfortunately the Corvette was a major victim of that time frame.
Yeah. What's another one you got, Zach?
So I'm going to go with brand new car, brand new. And it's, here we go, beating up on Ford again, I guess. But I mean, what can I say? So the 2021 Mustang Mach-E. Now,
yikes.
You look at this thing. First off, my issue, and I understand I'm like the four-door guy here, I guess, but like, okay, it's not only just a four-door, Lucci, it's a sedan. Like it's literally like a mini crossover looking type vehicle. It looks like a freaking Tesla. Like it does not look American. Like to me, that ruins the namesake Mustang. Like why would you call it a Mustang if it's not actually a Mustang? Like it's a Mustang if it's a two-door, you know, sport coupe that makes noise, not one that goes zing down the track, you know, like making sound like it's a freaking airplane. Like, no, I just have a hard time accepting that that's going to be a Mustang for 2021 and however many years after. Just looks too much like a Tesla, and you know how I feel about Tesla. So, you know, it says that there's a couple different, you know, I guess electric engine packages, and they make between, you know, the low end 346 horsepower equivalent and then the high end 480, which, I mean, that's all well and good, but honestly it's electric and it's a mini SUV. It's not a Mustang. So to me, so it's just kind of like a spit in the face to the Mustang legacy, if you ask me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's just like, it's better off like killing the car, like, you know, kill the model entirely. Like we all have our favorite models that have been killed off. Right. Mm-hmm. And, or like, well, what are you doing? Like, what, I don't know. There's whoever approved that to be called that, to bear the Mustang you know, name is just, I can't even wrap my head around it.
And I just hope the GM doesn't make the same mistake, even though I think that they might.
They are.
They are.
There's talk about it at least, right?
Yeah, there is. There is.
And I just don't get it. You know, and I think that's the other thing that's, I mean, yeah, with car manufacturers, right? There's always like, okay, one car manufacturer does something, so then other ones have a reaction to it. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes like, okay, if a car manufacturer does something like really stupid, you don't need to do the same thing.
Well, dude, it's, you know, when you talk about that, and not to go off topic here, but if you look, you see Ford and GM are very heavily EV focused, right?
Yeah.
And then I was reading an article about Dodge and Ram and that whole, you know, Stellantis, you know, whatever group.
Yeah.
They are on like the opposite side where I've seen they don't want to make an electric vehicle until like 2024. Yeah. And they're because they're afraid that if they do that, they'll lose a lot of their loyalty because a lot of their customers are, you know, they're like us. They like the gasoline engines, you know, the combustion engines that make noise. Like they like the old like American way, you know, they don't want some electric vehicle they have to charge and things like that. They're very like traditional consumer base for the most part, you know, so they're worried about backlash.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting. And I'm very curious to see how that whole thing's going to play out.
I think that's smart on their part also, just from a research and development standpoint, like think about the amount of money Ford and GM are going to be invested in all this research and development. And mm-hmm. Like, if you kind of wait a little bit, you know, then kind of there's like more, you know, of course, like, you know, how they manufacturers buy a car from another manufacturer and strip it apart to see how it's built. So it's mm-hmm. like, there's, if you kind of wait a little bit, it'd be easier and cheaper for them to probably develop something like that. I would assume, I could be wrong, but I don't know. I think just like you said, Zach, I think they're making the right choice. And if I was to go buy a car, you know, today, that's where I would be too. Just like, you know, how you were at the Dodge dealership. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's a tough decision to make, but I'm seriously considering making a switch for a daily driver, but
no car or no car.
That's what I hear. So, it's got a hammy, you know, as Joe Dirt would say, but, just to show that I don't just pick on Ford, I'll also say the 2019 and onward newer Silverados are absolutely hideous, my friends. I'll say that too.
Yeah.
Like, the front end of it looks like it might as well be like a Nissan Cube or something. Like, it just looks like an alien in the front. It doesn't look right. Like, come on.
Yeah, I was lucky. I got a 2018, mm-hmm. literally at the end of 2018, right before there were 2019s on the lot. And I was like, no way, no way. And, you know, yeah, I don't know what they were thinking. But we talked about that with like the Camaro and stuff too before. They don't look like an American car. And GM needs to hire some new designers. I actually saw one comment, let me just say this real quick, like online, where someone was hating on the Challenger for staying consistent for so long. And I was like, yeah. And like, I like, you should have seen all the comments. People were hating on this guy. Cause
good.
And I agree with everyone that I was like, well, yeah, they have like the perfect formula. Why would they mess it up?
It works.
And you know, sometimes it kind of is like, we're saying this whole episode, you know, sometimes, like, why mess up a good car? I mean, yeah, if there's mandates and stuff like that, I understand you got to make things fit. But there's been some companies like Pontiac back in the early 70s, that when they had to go to the 5 mile per hour crash bumpers in the front, they had like that nose that bounced back, like on the Trans Ams. Mm-hmm. I mean, really cool looking designs. Like, it became like iconic, you Absolutely. Know? So it's just, again, it's all about like the ingenuity within the car company. So that's our thoughts on some of the strangest and oddest cars that make us go, you know, WTF. And let us know what you think. Leave us a comment on social media. If you like this episode, you know, please like, leave a rating, and please share it with your car friends as well. You can also check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Motor Millennials. And don't forget to grab some of your favorite Motor Millennials gear at motormillennials.com. t-shirts, sweatshirts, stickers, mugs, all different kinds of cool stuff is up there. And we'll catch you next week right here again. As always, keep on motoring. Hit it.